This is an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The purpose of this prayer treatment is to confirm in consciousness that the only topic, the only qualities that can be real and are real and always have been real are spiritual, because spirit is the only substance. Therefore, the only substance in all existence is spirit. Spirit is God. God is spirit. God is all there is, because God is omnipresent. God is the only power, because God is omnipotent. Omni means one, only, and all. No competition, no opposition, nothing can dilute, divert, deflect the fact that God is all. There is nothing but God. Genesis 1 states, "And let us make man in our image and likeness." And then it says, "So God made man in his image and likeness." This is all from chapter 1, which is the spiritual record of all existence. So God made man as an image and likeness of himself. Man is the manifestation of God. Man is not a separate entity. Man has nothing and no existence of itself. It is all reflection. In other words, man is qualities reflected from God. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, defines God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Those are the elements. She defines the operators of the qualities of God as being the Word, which means all the facts about God, the Christ, which means that no matter what it is that we may think we're looking at, we must, in order to see reality, translate it, if it's good, to be perfect. And if it's not good, then we only look at it as a reminder that it is unreal and we need to reverse it, flip it, and look at the opposite, which is the truth. We must always separate anything that seems to be not good about anyone or anything as something that is floating around in non-existence, has no source, is nothing, and therefore we're not going to give it any place in our thought. That's what translation, that's what the Christ is all about, the second operator. The third operator is Christianity. That means we're going to live like Jesus lived, like Mary Baker Eddy lived, and other experts that could heal instantaneously, such as Joel Goldsmith, Frederick L. Rassen, Wentworth Winslow. They all had 15-minute appointments. By the end of 15 minutes, the healing was complete. Didn't matter what the problem seemed to be. They all had one category of being unreal, being a suggestion of evil, a suggestion that could be nullified by denying its reality. It's like a phone that is ringing. Someone is calling to give us a thought about something. If there is a single inkling of an absence of purity, it must be denied at the onset of the suggestion, and our thought must immediately jump to perfect God, perfect heaven, with perfect man, that's you and me, and everyone, being in the perfect heaven. And everything about God is omnipresent, so the perfect heaven is right here where we are. It is all a mental activity. What is our viewpoint about right where we are right now, and are we doing what we should be doing to be reflecting the qualities of God? Are we seeing everyone and everything being composed of the qualities of God and all being in one grand, infinite family? Every individual being a child of God. And everything being a projection of a spiritual thought and something that is visualized is classified as being for a benefit to whomever is involved. This prayer treatment is for not only every individual, but every group. In other words, the collective and universal, for the benefit of all mankind. That's easy to do. All we have to do is realize that there's only one creator, or rather, one revelator. The Bible tells us there is nothing new under the sun. So truth has always been in existence throughout all reality, throughout all existence. That's what truth is. Truth is a synonymous term for God that includes things such as motive, thought, speech, and action. And we must tend to every one of all three. Must never become lax, passive about anything, because that's death. That's the opposite of life. Edmund Burke, 200 or 300 years ago, said, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." And that includes what we do with our thoughts. Are they active? Occupied with truth? There are three quotes at the beginning of the textbook of Christian Science and the System of Divine Metaphysics. The textbook is credited to Mary Baker Eddy, although she says that she was a scribe unto orders of God, and God wrote it. Dr. Francis Fluno was on the board of lectorship appointed by Mary Baker Eddy in 1898. He had taken class from Mary Baker Eddy. He had been a homeopathic doctor, and then he earned the CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science, from Mary Baker Eddy. He came to the conclusion that homeopathy was not the right avenue to pursue if you wanted to help all humanity and where you were pursuing a path of truth. So when he learned about Christian Science, it didn't take him any time at all to immediately devote his efforts to learning about what it was all about. He never left. An avid student, an avid lecturer. One of the topics, and he wrote a page and a half article about it, called criticism. And he basically tells us, and this is reading between the lines a little bit, that criticism leads to all evil. That's a direct statement from him. And when I say reading between the lines, these are the thoughts that come to the surface right now. He didn't write them. Obviously, these are coming from God. And what it is the realization that if God is all, and that's what the Bible says, God is all. It says that God is omnipresent, God is infinite, that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. That's from Habakkuk. There's nothing new under the sun. Truth is always true, always has been true. So therefore, there is no creation. It's always been in existence. Everything good has always been in existence. And it's perfect. A Pharisee asked Jesus one time, said, "Good Master, how can I obtain eternal life?" It happened to me, a Pharisee that was very wealthy. He was a tax collector. Apparently, that enables one to become wealthy, whether it's by hook or crook or whatever method. But he didn't have enough. He wanted more than what money could buy. So he asked Jesus for the one thing he really wanted, in addition to what he already had. He didn't want to give up anything he had, but he wanted to put that as the icing on the cake, that it would last forever. And Jesus could sense that was his problem. So he knew exactly what to tell him. So first of all, he addressed the title that the Pharisee had given Jesus, Good Master. And Jesus said, "Why call thou me good? There's only one good, and that's God." So anyone who thinks Jesus is God, think about that. Jesus himself says he is not God. He is not good. Now, what could he possibly mean when he says he's not good? Mary Baker Eddy answers that question in the glossary, chapter 17 of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And she says that the definition of good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Jesus says, "That's not me. I'm not spirit." Spirit is a synonymous term for God. I reflect the one and only substance, and therefore I am spiritual, but I'm not spirit. We reflect or have the capacity, whether we do it or not is up to us individually, but we have the capacity to reflect every single quality of God. Not in quantity, because God is infinite. And all existence together is the manifestation of God. So we have the ability to reflect all the qualities of God, but not all of the quantity. And how would you possibly reflect all the quantity when God is infinite? Infinite means there's no end. It's not a container. It's not finiteness. It is the opposite of finiteness. Infinity. So Jesus said, I'm not good. Only God is good. And according to Mary Baker Eddy's definition, that's exactly right. Jesus is not good. We are not good. That's with a capital G. On a relative basis, we have the ability to be good as a good individual versus an evil individual. But that's a relative term. It's not capitalized. So then Jesus answered his question. He said, if you want to follow me, step number one is you sell everything you have. Everything. And give it to the poor. Well, he immediately knew that he was going to fail. Because he wasn't ready to give up anything, apparently. Let alone everything. And then after you give it to the poor, then come and follow me. In other words, walk down these dusty roads. Not have a home to live in, such as me. Jesus said he didn't have a roof to put over his head. Well, the Pharisee decided he wouldn't do that. Mary Baker Eddy says Jesus is the best man that ever trod the globe. And that he is the way shower. He didn't explain how he did all the healings. Everyone thinks they were miracles. Why? Because they don't have the foggiest understanding of how he did it. There was no magic. None whatsoever. But he did give us some clues. He gave us a lot of clues. If you want to learn about someone, study them. Find out everything you can about them. And if it's someone like Jesus, your time will be well spent. If it's a friend that is walking around with two legs and two arms, totally visible, then you're wasting your time. Because finding out about someone that is in a so-called human body takes you further and further away from God. If you want to find out about the real spiritual nature of an individual, all you have to do is study about God. We are all a spiritual image and likeness of God. So if we study about God, we study about the spiritual nature of everyone in all existence. And it's all excellent. Mary Baker Eddy says the difference between success and failure more often than not is attributed to how one uses their moments. Now, a moment has an infinite number of quantitative measurements because a moment means the smallest amount of time. We might say just a moment when someone is waiting on us to do something. You might say, just a moment, I'll be ready in 5 minutes. In that case, that definition of moment is 5 minutes. I've had someone say, I will do it tomorrow. And they don't do it for 1 week. So tomorrow in time with them was 1 week. Tomorrow is the busiest day of the year for someone that wants to procrastinate. Because if everything's going to be done tomorrow, that means it's going to be busy. If we're going to conduct our life in a proper manner, then we have to become as proficient as possible with the skills that are directly related with that. Time management, goal management, priority management. Anything we do with learning, whether it's reading, listening, writing, we need to become very proficient. If we're not a genius now, we need to cultivate our skills so that we will be a genius. What is meant by that? It means that you will contemplate something that would be of value to all humanity. That's better than only a collective group, but you could start with anything, anyone. You might find someone that is in need. You could take that on as a project of discovering what they really need and what is going to help them the most. And you devote effort to bringing it about. And of course, it should be with their total participation, because the active involvement is the key to them learning. And you will be learning as well. We cannot be involved with anyone where they are learning as a result of our relationship that we don't also learn. We may learn more than they did. We can never lose by helping someone find a solution to their problem and being involved to bring it about. It could be only an investment of time, or an investment of time and money, or whatever is needed. You may have too many clothes and they don't have any, or almost none, maybe only what they're wearing. They may not have any soap to launder. The definition of man on 591, which is the glossary, is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Of the seven synonymous terms for God, as a quick clue as to a key word or two about each one, mind is anything to do with a thought process. Shakespeare stated that there is nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Mary Baker Eddy felt that was such an important statement that she placed it at the front of the textbook as the number two quote. Now, to give us a clue of what we should be thinking about, she placed the number one quote from Jesus, which states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." So if we're going to think about anything, there's the clue on what to think about. When Jesus was in his trial, the king asked him, "What is truth?" Jesus didn't answer. He didn't expect the king to be receptive on what he said, no matter what he said. Jesus didn't have a single person at the trial that was there to support him. Not a single one. Everyone was afraid that they would be arrested. So he didn't answer, "What is truth?" Mary Baker Eddy gives us many terms to describe truth. Truth is everything that is real. That means it has to be from God. It has to be reflecting the qualities of God. There can't be any mistakes in it. It's the opposite of error. Error means it's a mistake. 7 times 10 in mathematics is 70. It's not 69.99999 ad infinitum. And it's not 70.0000 with a 1 on the end of it. It is exactly 70, and that's it. That's the truth about what 7 times 10 is in mathematics. But that doesn't mean anything unless you relate it to what you're going to do with it. Are you counting the number of cars in a parking lot, and they're all lined up in rows, and there's 10 rows, and there's 7 cars in each row? Are you counting how many days there are in a week, and something needs to be devoted, have devoted to it 10 weeks, so you know it's 70 days for that project? Numbers by themselves mean nothing. The operators in mathematics of add, subtract, multiply, and divide mean nothing unless you relate them to the 10 digits of 0 through 9. The 4 operators in metaphysics, divine metaphysics, as defined in the Book of Revelation and by Mary Baker Eddy, they don't mean anything unless you relate them to the synonymous terms for God. All the facts about God are tucked inside the words that are utilized by Mary Baker Eddy to define God. The translation doesn't do any good unless you're referring it to a thought or an activity, an event. Christianity doesn't mean anything if you're asleep. You have to be awake, and then you can apply it to everything you think, say, and do. And if you really understand what the word is, and you learned from it, and you also did the translation in the Christ or interpretation, then you're prepared to demonstrate it, to prove it, to prove that you understand it correctly, and the result is healing. It could be in a totally different way than what we were expecting. If we're out of money, and we're trying to realize that all supply, no matter what form it takes, is from God. Because God is infinite. God doesn't know anything about you and me as an individual. His laws are out everywhere, in everywhere. They're here, there, and everywhere. They're omnipresent. It is up to us to get our thought, speech, and action in alignment with the laws of God. And that's what Christianity is all about. Living the laws of God. Doing self-examination to make sure that we don't have a single thought, and we don't say anything, and we don't do anything that is in conflict with the absolute, perfect, omnipresent laws of God. We don't have any choice. If we want results, spiritual results, permanent results, the correct result, we may think we need something and we may think we know exactly what we need, but how can we do that if all intelligence is from God? We have to get we out of the way. We have to get self-will out of the way. We have to recognize that that's not the will of God. Our individual personal preference has nothing to do with reality. We don't know enough about all the possibilities to even know what is best for us. What is best for us may be totally different than what we think. So we have to cultivate our understanding of spirit, as well as mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. And we have to utilize the word Christ and Christianity in order to do it. A fellow went to heaven, knock on the door. He wanted to talk to God. He was down and out. He was out of everything except the clothes on his back. Had no place to live, no food to eat. He was at the end of his rope. So he knocked on the door. An angel came. And the angel said, "How may I help you?" He said, "I need this, this, and this. I'm desperate. I don't know where else to go, and I understand God is in control of everything and has everything." He was shocked when the angel said, "I'm sorry, but we don't have any of that." You see, what he wanted was to replace something that was a material-based act, you know, a material-based product, an item. He wanted so many bananas and so many pounds or kilograms of oranges and apples and, you know, whatever, milk, eggs, meat, whatever he, fish. He was out of food, so he was giving a shopping list. He didn't have a place to live, so he said, "I need a house, and I need 3 bedrooms in it, one for me, one for children, one for my mom and dad, because they don't have any place to live. I need a car. I need this, that, and everything." And everything he described was in material terms, and that's why she said, "We don't have what you need." He wanted a matter-based substance that would expire, because that's the only thing he understood. If Jesus thought the supply was material, could he have supplied the 50 or 75,000 people, or 50,000, whatever it was, in those two hillside meetings? One had 4,000 men, and the other one had 5,000, plus women and children, which they did not even count in those days. They were so low in the opinion of everyone that they didn't even get counted. So if you figure that there's probably, you know, 3 or 4 children and a wife, you might have like 4 or 5 times that many. So instead of having 4,000, you know, you had probably 20 or 25,000. And instead of 5,000, you know, you had another 25,000. Anyway, he taught a lot of them. And the disciples said, "They're hungry. They've been here for extended period of time, they're all tired. And we only have, I think it was 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread." Jesus says, "No problem." Because he wasn't looking for fish and bread to feed them with. He knew that all supply was spiritual. And it was infinite. And in one case, it says, after they ate, he said, "Now, gather up everything that's left over." And there were 12 baskets full. That's like 12 times as much as what they started with. Are we willing to think about a different dimension for identifying anything? Do we express gratitude for the spiritual nature of what is visible? A car. I had a good friend, a long-time practitioner, and she said, when you're driving, I told her I was going to take a trip. In fact, I was taking one to be in the town where she was, which was a couple thousand miles away. And I was going to drive because I needed to do some things, and I needed to have the car with me. And it seemed to work out good for me. So, she said, think about the car being love, and that the driver is mind, and the road is truth. When I was there at her home, with her and her husband, for an afternoon, the Summer Olympics were on, and when I came to the door, she said, would you like to watch them for a few minutes? And the event that was taking place was gymnastics. And so, of course, I said yes. And so she said, look at the grace of that girl. She was automatically thinking of spiritual qualities. At another time, she told me in a phone call, she says, qualities. Everything is qualities. Could we ever be short of qualities? What are we giving out? What are we giving to others? Are we expressing mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Mind includes the quality of intelligence. Think of the qualities of God being a matrix that is seven columns and seven rows. So it's a 7x7 matrix, 49 cells. Pick any quality that has to do with mental. All of the terms that Mary Baker Eddy uses to define mind, with a capital M, meaning God, are on the website in a list. And the same with each of the seven synonymous terms for God. Let's use intelligence. When we think about mind, are we intelligent about the way we think? That is applying mind to the qualities of mind, to a quality of mind. As mentioned, spirit is substance. Now, to be perfect, it has to be flawless. If it's flawless, it's going to be transparent. And if it's going to be transparent and flawless, then it's going to be reflective. So, what is an intelligent way to think about substance? The individuals that were researching matter kept splitting an atom time and time again, each time getting smaller. And they finally came to the conclusion that there was nothing there at all in the way of something opaque. And they came to the conclusion that the observers were fabricating what they thought they were seeing because they had been led to believe that everything was made up of matter, because that's the lie that has been compounded for all known existence. It didn't have a source. Genesis chapter 1 says that God is the only source. He created everything, and at the end, in verse, I think it's 31, it says, and everything he made was very good. Good means that it expresses spirit. In other words, the substance is flawless, transparent, reflective, that it reflects the power of God, omnipotence. It reflects science, all science, omniscience, omniscient, omniscience, that's all science. And it's omnipresent. The truth is true everywhere. It's not only true this moment right here, it's true everywhere. The truth is true everywhere, and there's no limitation of time or space or any other dimension one dreams of. And it's omni-action. Those are that's the definition that I recited earlier from page 587. Definition of good. Now there's another definition of God on that same page. The first one was from Recapitulation 465. That's chapter 14. And the glossary is chapter 17. So the definition of God in the glossary is slightly different. Not in conflict, of course. It says God is the great I am. All-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. If we're going to be intelligent about analyzing the substance of something, we have to realize that it has a spiritual nature because it's from God. Anything that is real is from God. Soul means the spiritual senses. Spiritual because spirit is the only substance, and sense is what soul is defined as. In other words, our seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smell. Those are the senses that we utilize to identify things. We can't just use one sense if we want to get the whole picture. If we want to really examine something, we've got to examine it from every aspect, all five of the senses. We can't miss a single one. If you want to learn about God and about yourself, of course, learning about God is learning about yourself because we are the image of God, then we have to utilize as many senses as we can. One of the greatest ways to learn is to record in your own thoughts, in your own voice, what you see and hear and think about, feel, taste, and smell, anything at all of the five senses, and the more you utilize, the more accurate you're going to be. We have a button on the website that says heal everything. If one follows what is suggested, they are going to use every sense possible. That includes all five of the senses. Mind is utilized in reading. So you need to see the words. You need to hear the words. You need to use all five senses. And fortunately, we have technology available to be able to do that. Mary Baker Eddy didn't. There wasn't any such thing as a recorder or a playback instrument. So the recommended procedure is written in detail, and I will just give you a clue right now. The very first thing you've got to do is to cultivate a life of giving. The fellow that went to see God to tell him that he was out of everything, he wanted to take. He wanted to take anything that he could get from God, but he was too naive to think about getting something of more substantial value than something he could run out of. If we look to the invisible source, the visible needs will be supplied. Because when we are in alignment with God, we're in a whole new dimension of resources. We're in a realm of resources that has no limit. How do you think is the best way to receive all that you need? And you can't do it with that in mind because you're thinking about yourself. What am I going to receive? What am I going to get out of this? If you do that, you are going backwards. But that will be the result. Solomon, when he asked God for wisdom so that he could judge the people in his kingdom fairly after he inherited the throne from his son, King David, who's the one that slew Goliath, he didn't expect anything back. He was only wanting to give. He wanted to be fair in the way he judged people. So, because he didn't ask for anything, he received everything. And I think even to this day, he's considered to be the wealthiest man that ever existed in history of mankind. If you're short of something, have you ever thought about giving? Have you ever thought about being grateful for what you have? In a spiritual nature, not naming how many cars or how many houses or how many whatever. How much money doesn't mean anything. You have to think about the spiritual nature and be grateful for the spiritual nature of what you have. Are you living? I don't think you could hear me if you weren't. Are you grateful for life? How's the best way you can be grateful for life? By expressing it. Express life. Don't sleep 12 hours a day. Mary Baker Eddy and most successful people have a short period of time, way below average, of how much they sleep. It's common to sleep 3, 4, 5 hours at the max for successful people. Mary Baker Eddy states under a paragraph of practical benefits of being a student of Christian Science, and one of them is you require less repose. In other words, less sleep, less inactive time of rest. It comes naturally because you're more interested in life. You're more interested in living. And then when you're awake, then you can actively express the qualities of God. How about joy? Is joy a quality of God? Is that a quality of life? Have you ever looked in the mirror to see how you look when you don't make an effort to smile? And then smile. Look in the mirror and smile. And don't make any effort to smile. Just look in the mirror the way you are when you walk up there. A smile adds the difference between whether you have an appearance that is not so good compared to one that is excellent. You cannot be angry if you are smiling from your heart. You can't do it. They're opposites. Joy and anger are opposites. Are you unhappy about a lot of things in your life? Do a self-examination of the good things. Instead of thinking about what you don't have that you think you need, think about the things that you have automatically. If you wake up, you have life. And you have 1,440 minutes to do anything you want to with it. and it occurs every 24 hours. Do you use it as if you really love the time, or do you waste it? You can do this with every phase of your life, every phase of your day, your schedule. Do you plan out the sequence for your errands, if you do any errands yourself? Are you using intelligence to do that? Do you have any structure in your life? Or do you just kind of do things chaotically and haphazard? When the thought comes to you, then you do it. How about determining the difference between what is true and what is false? You're using intelligence. How about the way you love? Are you loving intelligently? Or in a materialistic, sensual way? And if that's not what you're doing, you don't consider it love. Think about how long that lasts compared to really doing spiritual things, caring for others, being grateful for what they do. For what they do, not for you, what they do, for others. When you see good done, you should say, wow, that guy is reflecting the qualities of God in giving. Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students, what do they do when they're walking down the street when they're in public and there's other people around? He didn't know how to answer. After pausing for a few minutes, giving him time to present what he's going to say, he wasn't coming forward with anything. So she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Then he realized that he wasn't practicing what he was studying. He was just going about his business, totally oblivious to the world around him. He may not have his own car, and he uses a taxi to go where he wants to go. What is his attitude about the taxi driver and having a car to get into? Maybe it's raining hard, and he's got a dry place inside the car to get to where he wants to go. Is there any expression of gratitude? When you're checking out, how do you treat the clerk? She may have been there for 10 hours on her feet, maybe very tired, maybe didn't even take any lunchtime. Do you do anything to bring a smile on her face? If we utilize intelligence with everything we do and everything we think, everything we say, then we're cultivating love. Because love is wholeness and completeness. That includes the qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, as well as love itself. So we could fill out that matrix that is 7x7. And think about some qualities of mind and say, okay, how did I use this? And the same with every one of the seven synonymous terms. Mary Baker Eddy says if we're really a good Christian Scientist, we're not going to have time to criticize others or to mess with someone else's thoughts or pry into their personal affairs. Said, we'll keep busy taking care of our own consciousness, our own thoughts, and that's what we should be doing. We should be taking care of our business, unless it's someone that's dependent upon us, like a minor child or someone that we're taking care of for whatever reason, then we should be devoting our effort only to ourselves. And I don't mean in a selfish way, I'm talking about cultivating our thoughts so that we are expressing the qualities of God. Do you think it's a good idea to forgive people for things that they've done wrong? What are you forgiving? Why are you forgiving? Do you think it's right to forgive somebody for something Because you condemned them? You judged them? Or do you think a better approach might be to not condemn them or judge them in the beginning? Everyone probably has a closet full of mistakes. Maybe some people have to have a big closet and other ones have a smaller one. Everyone has a closet with mistakes in it. Otherwise, you have never done anything. That's the only way not to make a mistake. And then you're making the biggest mistake of all because you're not doing anything. Remember what Edmund Burke said. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. If we want evil to triumph, that's a good way to let it do. It's a good way to let it develop and have an effect on a lot of people. We know there's something that needs to be done, and we don't do it. We may see an evil act. Should we spend our time making sure that we condemn the individual that did it, and we expose them, try to do it publicly? Do you think no one can step in their shoes and take their place? Evil is very mobile. It's like water on the roof that seeks the path of least resistance. It goes around obstacles, seeking a place to escape. That's what evil does. In fact, it's the opposite. Instead of seeking a place to escape, it seeks a place that it can make an impression, that it can become effective. Evil prospers and grows when it's being ignored. That's one thing we do not want to do. Never ignore evil. You have to separate the evil from any person that seems to be the one that is living the evil, doing it in their thoughts, speech, and action. Maybe they are attacking you or your family. Evil works on deception and decoys and disparaging one's character. They're looking for a weak spot. If you have a strong resistance, it's going to go somewhere else. It's going to seek an easy target, one that is passive, one that accepts whatever suggestion is laid out in front of them without thinking. We have to build a strong defense. Mary Baker Eddy says we've got to guard our door of thought as if we were guarding against thieves and murderers. And of course, that's exactly what evil is. A thief, it tries to steal the goodness of our character. Murderer, it tries to kill every good action we're involved in. And you can go right on down the line. Bear false witness? Yeah. It'll try to make up a lie about you, disparage your character. And if you're a public figure, it will give it to the media. And then the media will announce it, and they have no obligation to tell them their source. And then you can use the media as your reason for disliking someone. Say, well, that's no good. That guy's a terrible person. People have been critical of the President of the United States. Well, there's various motives involved there. One thing, he's exposing corruption. So if you're corrupt and you think you're going to be exposed, well, that might be a reason you think you should hate him. Anyone that is not ascended has a closet with mistakes in it that they would like no one to know about. Everyone. Everyone knows about some of the mistakes that Jesus made, because they know he had 11 disciples that were traitors. Mary Baker Eddy tried for a lot longer period than Jesus and made a lot more mistakes, because everyone she chose was a traitor. When she passed on, the church hierarchy, and I mean, there were a lot of people involved. They were all over the world. Some of the largest cities had 40 or 50 churches. The bureaucracy of the church threatened the members that if they talked about Mary Baker Eddy or promoted her, they would be subject to excommunication from the church. And everyone bent their knee to that bureaucracy. Everyone. No one stood up for Mary Baker Eddy. They thought their membership in the church was more valuable than integrity. Jesus was only in his ministry for 3 years. Mary Baker Eddy was in her ministry from 1866 until 1910. 44 years. And she even let a number of them live in her home to give them day-by-day instructions on how to heal everything that there is. And even after all that, one-on-one, as the need occurred, they thought church membership was more valuable than standing up for Mary Baker Eddy. I'm sure she felt the same as Jesus. He said, I have more to say, but you're not ready to hear it. She knew. In fact, that's why she hid the system. She says on page 146 that divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. And she hid the system. It's all in the science and health, but she hid it. Because she knew that they weren't even close to being ready. And she said it'll be another 50 years before anyone is ready to hear it. And that's just about how long it took. It took about 40 years before anything was published. There was one student that understood what the system was about when she was there. And he showed it to her. He wrote it all out and showed it to her. She said, don't show this to anyone. The public is not ready for it. She appreciated his spiritual nature to be able to put it all together. Because she told Laura Sargent, her number one assistant, I've hidden it, and hidden it, and if I hide it anymore, it'll never be found. So she couldn't hide it anymore. Because she wanted it to be found when the public was ready for it. Christian Science includes the finest religion ever, which is Christianity, recognizing the spiritual nature of Jesus, who healed every obstacle that he was faced with, and he did it in a scientific way. But he didn't explain it. Mary Baker Eddy was an anointed messenger, just as was Jesus, but in a different way. He was here to show that it could be done, and she was appointed an anointed messenger to show how he did it. So she discovered the science of the healing methods of Jesus. And he discovered that it could be done. But because she put it into a system, anyone that has a burning desire can practice being a genius. They find out a worthwhile project that's going to benefit everyone involved, and the more people, the better. If they can include all mankind, that's the best. They determine a plan that seems to be the right plan to proceed. They monitor the results live, constantly. They make changes as more spiritual things are revealed to them or changes that need to be made in the plan. And they work tenaciously without interruption. they live the life of developing what needs to be developed to come to a conclusion. That's a genius. What decimal or what percentage of people do you think that have an idea and they start and they don't finish it? The ones that do that and finish it is far less than 1%. Probably 1/10,000 to 1. I don't know what the number is, but it's a very, very small percentage of people that will stick with the plan and make changes as needed and never be discouraged. And if get knocked down, get back up every time. Because if you stay down, that means you gave up. We have a video on the website, and it's Sylvester Stallone. And he's known for being, in his movies, a fighter. Someone that never gives up. And he said, and he's talking from his heart. This isn't a movie or anything. This is how he feels about life. And he said, the toughest thing in the world against you is going to be life. It'll knock you down on your knees. Almost everybody will give up. He said, but you can't do it. You have to get back up and go forward. Everyone faces challenges. Everyone. If they're visible, they have challenges they're facing. Sometimes the best way to define truth is to see the opposite and flip it. And you need to flip it every time you see the opposite. The story of the good and bad gardener. They were both taking care of estates that were adjacent, had a common property line, and the one was very well educated in gardening and plants and everything he needed to know about soils and so forth. And the other one was just a kind of an average plodder along. So he would lose plants from time to time because he didn't take premium care of them. And he decided, well, you know, this garden is so beautiful next door. He's got more than what he needs anyway. I'm going to just take one from him. And he got in the habit of doing it. One day, a friend of the good gardener came to visit him early in the morning before he had been out into his garden. And he asked if he could see it. And so they went out together. And sure enough, there was a plant right in an obvious place as they entered the garden that had been taken away. The hole was there. Didn't even cover up the dirt to make it less obvious. And he said, what's going on here? He said, everything, looking out here, everything is so beautiful. He said, my best friend took that. He said, why do you call him your best friend? Well, when he has a plant that dies, he figures that he can get one from me for free, so he just comes in and takes it when I'm not here. Well, why do you call him your best friend? Because he reminds me that I have a decision on how I'm going to think about this. Everyone has an opportunity to think about anything. Remember that quote from Shakespeare? Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Well, this gardener thought about it being an opportunity for him to make sure that he wasn't going to yield to beating the guy down, you know, with resentment or revenge or any negative things, judging him, condemning him. But it was an opportunity for him to realize this was a time for him to have discipline in his thought, to make sure that he only thought about good. Separate the evil act from the individual that didn't know any better. We've all made mistakes. The good gardener, I'm sure, had some things in his closet of mistakes. Dale Carnegie, one of the greatest trainers for personal success, said, be very careful about making a strong opinion about something. Because tomorrow you may have been enlightened and reversed your position, found out new things, and realized that the other fellow that had a difference of opinion was correct. Einstein says, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. Einstein was asked if he had 1 hour to solve a very difficult problem, and if he was successful in solving it, it would save a lot of lives. How would he approach it? He said, I'd spend 95% of the time, you know, like 55 minutes, deciding the right question to solve. And then I could probably solve it in 5 minutes. So 95% to analyze things, and 5% to do the work to solve it. Do we plan things out, or do we just barge ahead at what's right in front of us? If you study anything about how to be successful with your time, it says, well, of course, there's a lot of other things involved, like goal management and determining your goals and everything, schedule management, priority management. And it says, when you begin the day, begin immediately on the most important project. Don't start with cleaning up your desk or doing little things that will only take a little bit of time, and then decide that when I get all of these little things done, then I will start the most important project. It says start the most important project first. First. Because all these little things will end up absorbing very valuable time. And they're not as valuable as the most important project is. So you started immediately as soon as you are ready for the day and whatever you're going to do, whether it's at work or whatever. You start it as soon as possible without delay. And you take as few of interruptions as possible. Well, that's what he did. That's what the successful man does. Are we trying to solve a problem in Christian Science? Richard Strain, he's an author on our website. That's the only reason I mentioned his name, so you can read and listen. It's in MP3 as well. He was at the end of his rope. He was gone from his home 18 hours a day, just in time to grab some sleep and eat, get up, probably eat again, breakfast, and go. So he went to a practitioner because that was his background in Christian Science, and so he needed to get a solution. So he went to her, happened to be a woman. He poured out his woes. So she says, when do you study? He was very embarrassed. He didn't study at all. She said, if you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to be able to solve this in Christian Science. So think about that. What did he need to contribute? The Bible says we should tithe. I don't think of that as just being money, but everything in your life. All of your time, all of your thoughts, everything. And yes, money. But many times money is not the right thing to give. You may want to use your money to buy what the individual needs, but to just give the money is usually not the right thing to do. DOGE, D-O-G-E, Department of Government Efficiency, was thought of and developed in the U.S. government in January, the day of the inauguration of the president. And one of the main platforms that the president ran on, both in 2016 and 2025, well, in 2020 and 2024, was to cut down the size of the U.S. government and get rid of the corruption. So it was not the wealthiest man in the world's idea to begin with, but he's the one that knew how to get it done, because he had really expert programmers, and he is an expert programmer himself. So they set up this Department of Government Efficiency, and they started operating at 2 o'clock in the morning after the day of the inauguration in January 2025, a little over a year ago. And they found that an enormous amount of money was being paid directly by the U.S. government to a department called USAID. You know, aid. It's supposed to be aid to help other people worldwide. And they did an analysis on that, and they discovered that as little as 0% and the maximum of 5% of the money that was collected and spent actually got down to the people that they were advertising for. In other words, they might say, these children are hungry, have no place to shelter, or whatever. They came up with all these different reasons to spend the money, and they found that between 0 and 5%, depending on which particular project it was, actually got the money to the people they were advertising for. It was all money laundering operation. Money laundering operation. Right now, there's a big push from UNICEF, UNICEF, and that's supposed to be for the benefit of children, and it's by the United Nations. The same thing. They show you these pathetic videos with these children that, like, the only thing they've got is bones. They are so deprived and starving. And what do? The children don't get anything. Nothing is spent on the children. Nothing is spent to save the children. It's all a money laundering operation. It's all a psyop to get you to spend money. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute recommends that you don't give money to any organization where you do not know the people and have some way to monitor how that money is spent. So it automatically rules out all large organizations. And we suggest you start with the homeless people and the unemployed people in the United States. We have plenty. Plenty. And not that you should give them money directly, but help solve their problem. They all have different problems. If you have the resources to give a large amount of money, or devote a large amount of money to solving a problem, define what you want to do. Determine a plan. Be a genius. Have a plan that's going to help everybody involved. And it's going to be efficient. And get experts in there to do things and make sure everything is structured and managed very tightly. There's lots of ways to help other people that are in need. But you can't just take the easy route and write a check. Or people don't write checks much anymore, but, you know, make a transfer. The United Nations is known to be very corrupt. It should have been disbanded 50 or 75 years ago. I don't know when it was started, but when it was started, it should have been disbanded pretty soon thereafter. And they just keep creating wars to try to have an excuse to be in existence. So we need to think about how can we become a giver with our heart, not in order to get something back, but in order to help other people solve their problems. If you give it 1 minute of thought, you can probably come up with 10 ideas. It's so easy if you are alert to the needs of other people. To answer the question about Mary Baker Eddy asking her student what she did or what he did when he walked in, you know, in public where there were other people around there, what do you do with your thought, speech, and action? In other words, is the question, are you utilizing what you learn in Christian Science and direct that to help everyone you see in a generic way? And by generic, I don't mean try to give them a personal treatment, because they didn't ask for it, they don't know anything about it, and we shouldn't try to mess with the thoughts of others without their permission, without their request. But there's generic ways we can do it by speaking in terms of man. And anyone that is within our thought can be benefited from it if we know what we're talking about and if we do it correctly. And these prayer treatments teach the system and how to do it in a structured, scientific way so you will get the same kind of results that Jesus did. There's nothing magic about it. The last 101 pages of the textbook are testimonies from 85 people, and it's been in there for, you know, since 1910, so 115 years, 117 years, 16. So they're effective, they're verified, and they had healings on 486 different problems between the 85 of them. So each one of them had about 6 healings apiece. They were probably trying to solve one. And because of their spiritual advancement as they were studying and getting the problem out of their consciousness and thinking about God and the relationship between God and man, they ended up healing every problem they had. And they didn't even think about some of them. They had a vision problem. They would end up all of a sudden one day reading without their glasses or even thinking about picking them up because that was no longer a part of their consciousness. And it might be several days before they even realize that they're not using their glasses anymore. Now, that's just a minor example because people have been healed of so-called terminal diseases. Everything you can imagine. Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead. Of course, Jesus did. Mary Baker Eddy did. Bicknell Young, he drowned and came back to life because he made the decision to do it. He could see people viewing his body, lamenting over him because they all went swimming together as friends. And he decided that, yes, there were things that he could do to help humanity. So he made the conscious decision to come back to life and wake up. And that's what he did. Mary Baker Eddy gave 7 prayers to her 1898 class, which was the last class before she closed her college and then relied on her books to be the teacher. And she also started the Christian Science Monitor about 10 years later because she saw the media was not being honest in the way they were reporting the news. Does that sound familiar with anyone? We're facing that same thing here for decades. So she started a Christian Science Monitor, and the motto of it was to help to bless all mankind and injure none. What a motto. Wouldn't it be great if every news media organization had that as their motto? It's the golden rule. The golden rule. That's what Christian Science is, the golden rule. Here's a couple of thoughts from Einstein before we close. His friend, who was on the Atomic Energy Commission, this is all on the website. Einstein is listed as an author, so you can just go to his page and read all about it. And everyone on that Atomic Energy Commission passed on from radiation except for his friend. So he asked him, "How did you survive? Everyone else is gone." And he said, "I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy, the writings, and Christian Science. I studied it methodically, systematically, scientifically, just like I do my other scientific work. And it's effective. I was healed." Einstein had known about Christian Science, but he didn't give it too much thought because it was so much the opposite of what he had devoted his life to. So he had a total opposite change in his thought after learning about what happened with his friend. He attended the local church. He spent devoted time in the reading room studying the textbook where it was quiet and away from everyone else. A reading room is a like a library that churches are supposed to have, and they should be in a public place where everyone can, you know, go in there anonymously without feeling like they're obligated to a church if they walk into a church to study. So they're purposely in business areas and things like that where people can have easy access to it and not feel a sense of obligation because they're walking into a church. And after thoroughly studying the textbook, he made some very significant statements. He said, "Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. She discovered it in 1866, so that would place his comments to be around 1946. And he said, "A woman, because at that time in history, a woman could not vote, could not hold title to property, and didn't have many of the normal liberties that were given to men." So he said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. In other words, his whole life had been studying about the opposite, and he was barking up the wrong tree. And then he said, "Science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind." So he realized that you needed to have both, a scientific way to live your life so that you would be the most productive, and that you would need to have a religion that was like Christianity is, without limits, not rely on other people for healing or whatever. And he also said, "Blessed art thou," referring to Mary Baker Eddy, "because everything that is in this book," referring to the textbook, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. In Mary Baker Eddy's day, this attracted some of the best thinkers of that era. And it's difficult to understand why it's not more natural for good thinkers to reject what most churches are teaching. because there's no science to it at all. And they're not following what Jesus did at all. And the common belief is that Jesus is God. There's a book that explains all this, and it all stems from the Council of Nicaea, which took place in 325 AD between the governments of Europe and the major religions of Europe. And as a result of that, that's what most churches are using as their dogma. We have the book, and it's by Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He's one of the finest Bible scholars, along with Mary Baker Eddy, and the three others that I mentioned that had 15-minute appointments. You've got to count them as wonderful Bible scholars, or they wouldn't be able to do what they did. They wouldn't be able to relate the Bible to Christian Science unless they were Bible scholars and really understood what it was saying. So Mary Baker Eddy provided 7 prayer treatments to her top class. She handpicked them all. And to tell you how top they were, on the third day she gave them an assignment to go out and perform a healing. And they all came back the next day to report, and it was 100% results. And everyone that completed the class was had earned a CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. And healing includes things such as electricity, the weather, anything and everything in one's life. I shall now recite one of the 7 Diapason of Heaven treatments by Mary Baker Eddy. And that will close this prayer treatment. And if there's any thought that occurs while reciting that, I will make it after I say amen. I will add it on and also give the time and the date for record purposes. And when I say the end, then it's really the end. So if you want to hear the last breath, then wait for the end. Okay. Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy. The subject of this prayer treatment is spirit, all existence, here, now. So therefore, I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy with a focus on spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit, individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. A thought occurred to me that I didn't mention, and that is that Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour of the day. She doesn't say how long, could have been 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. But no matter what she was doing, she devoted time every hour of her waking day to self-examination, to make sure that she was only thinking good about everyone and everything, never attaching any kind of problem, any kind of evil that they may be displaying to them as an individual. But she thought of everyone as an individual, innocent child of God. Everyone having the same Father, Mother, God, and everyone, you, me, and everyone, being brethren and sisters, all in one family with one real Father and Mother, which is God. She said that as she did this, and I don't recall her saying what year she started doing this, but she found that it made a major impact in the results of her work. It is Friday, February 27, 2026, at 09:21. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the topic of spirit, all existence, here, now, meaning that that is the substance of everything that is real. The end.